has ginger inside.
Tastes like Zobo Ball.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Bag is Back podcast.
Yes, sir.
And today we have a special guest in our in this mist, mist.
That's right.
In our mist, listening. For those listening, we have David with us here today.
What's up, guys?
We'll give him a chance to introduce himself. But first, you know how we do on Bag is Back. We have to play categories. But I mean, if you guys recognize today, we're both wearing jerseys.
Yeah,
repping for our teams.
Best team in the world.
No, what?
Tough times don't last, but tough people do.
Number eight is not the. If number eight is the best, then.
Number eight now will be eight.
Yeah. That's a good
don't
one.
Hit. Don't hit.
That's a good one. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, man.
All right. Before we get started, we're going to play. We're going to play three rounds of categories.
Okay.
And we're going to play three rounds of categories. And you know, for our first time listeners, categories is a game where you pull out a card from the deck. It has a category. And you're supposed to mention examples of the categories between ourselves. The first person who hesitates or cannot mention a category loses.
Okay.
So I'm going to play best of three rounds.
Okay.
David already knows how to play this game. So if he wins.
You are the creator of the game now.
if David wins.
Yeah.
You know. It wouldn't be a shock.
What would be my prize if I win?
What would be? So it's always a bet.
Okay.
So, you know, we have to bet. Best of three. What will best of three get? Let's
best of three will get a free ticket to the next uncle's event.
I mean, but if I win... If I win, I'm ready there. So no. Give me something.
If you win, I'll promote the next event for free. You know, now I'm in my bag right now, so...
All right. You heard him.
Yeah.
Free ticket... Free
for
promotion.
Me, free promotion
for
got it.
Me. All right, so best of three. Let's look for. Let's give it a nice shuffle. Pick from somewhere in between. No, this one will be hard for us. This one is that? Cosmetics.
Oh yeah, now.
David, we should go.
Yeah, let's go.
All right.
Wait, is it the brand or
no? Just general,
the actual product.
Yeah, the product is the product.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So cosmetics that you know,
right?
Mascara,
eyeliner,
eyeshadow,
concealer,
blush,
powder,
lipstick,
foundation.
David, where are you getting this? How do you know these things?
You just know now. You just know.
I see. 1-0.
1-0. Okay.
All right.
Sure, you'll not rethink this bet like this.
We still have two rounds. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I'm coming for you.
Okay.
Pick one.
I should pick. Okay. This one will be hard though.
Let's go. You made me do a hard one.
So the category is romantic movies.
Romantic movies.
Yeah, it can be rom-com.
Yeah, rom-com, maybe drama, tragic romance.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go.
Right, okay.
Let's go.
Okay. I should go first?
Yeah.
Titanic.
The Notebook.
Think Like a Man.
The Vow.
Think Like a Man 2.
Think Like a Man 3. There's no three.
Best of three rounds. Let me just do a clean sweep. I'm already leading 2.
You're doing a clean sweep. Okay. That one was too hard.
You know I'm Mr. Romantic. Right?
Wow.
Okay, last one.
Last round.
Man, this will be this one. Taylor Swift songs.
Taylor Swift songs. Me too. I don't know. I only know one. So should we let's pick on that card.
Let's skip it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Put it back in the deck.
Maybe.
The category is rappers. So,
okay.
Like global rappers.
Anybody?
Yeah, anybody.
All right.
All right, let's go. Vector.
Odumodu.
MI.
Mode 9.
Fino.
Kendrick.
Olamide.
Drake.
J. Cole.
K-pop.
Now, okay. Tin, they not like us. See, yeah. Guys, this was too easy. I just want myself a free ticket to the next Uncle's events.
May 31st.
Shameless plug, May 31st. You know, pull up, I'll be there.
Axis.
Axis, Toronto. Right. Who's playing? You and.
Yeah, me, Debo. You know, we have other DJs, Ayo Mixing, right. And DJ Javier. So it's going to be a really good time.
Star studded lineup.
There's a lot of. Surprises awaiting.
Right.
Awaiting the Torontonians. All right, that. David, you won. Yeah. You Thank won you, categories. Sir.
Thank you.
Cheers to you.
Cheers to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to give you one free box.
No, I already ordered one, so it's okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get started on the pod now. We'll get started on the pod now. Yeah. And today we have, you know, like I said, we have a very special guest. Very, very special. For real.
I'm shy.
And, you know, I don't want to do too much intro. I want, you know, David, this is David. I want him to introduce himself. Mm-hmm. So, David, can you kick us off? Just give us a brief intro on who you are, what you do.
Right. Hi everyone, my name is David Obi, well, you can call me the Don. I'm based in Toronto and, you know, I'm in the world of product management within financial services, where I focus on a couple of cool initiatives, you know, that drive digital containment. So what that means is rerouting our clients or users, you know, to digital channels. Mm-hmm. Think about it as when you go into Walmart, mm-hmm. and, you know, instead of you going to the counter to pay for your items, you do self-checkout.
Okay.
So, yeah, all of those initiatives, you know, they drive cost savings as mm-hmm. well as, you know, they free up capacity for our frontline workers to focus on higher priority tasks. So
so that's what you call digital containment.
Yeah, containment. You know, you're containing them within a channel. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. Oh, that's cool. We'll get like more into that and explain more. But I'm curious. So you do product management in that field, and I just want to learn. You know, what is product management in your own definition? What does product management mean to you, or what does it mean to the world generally?
Okay. Not to sound too cliche, but if we're to look at the etymology of the word, you know, product and management, so products, you know, could be any product, whether digital or or hardware, you know, but in this case, it is software. And within that product is a business product. I don't know if that makes sense, right?
Okay.
And then you are just managing, you know, the success of that product from conception, right, to possibly execution.
Oh.
So that starts with, like, developing a proof of concept, you know, and developing a strategy on how that product would come to life, right? So strategy
to sales too.
But in this case, you know, we have like a whole team that's dedicated to driving salesy products, but, you know, mine is just more around containment.
But you have to work with those people.
Yes, it's a very cross-functional sport where you work with teams from marketing. Well, in my world, there's compliance, you know, there's legal, because I work in a heavily regulated industry, so there has to be compliance, legal, marketing, you know, design, UI, UX design, analytics. Because these days everything you have to do is data driven. You know, you just can't make wild guesses like just go based off intuition, like, I think, you know, this thing would do XYZ because I feel like, you know,
I have these shiny ideas.
Exactly, you know, because ideas are cool, but, you know, execution is better. So
I see. Oh, that's cool. And what took you into product management, how did you know, like, what's your background in, what did you do in, like, undergrad? Or did you do grad school? Like, what brought you into product management?
That's a good question. That's a good question. So my background, I studied petroleum engineering.
Petroleum?
Yeah.
Oil.
Yeah, I know. Oil.
Why are you not in, like, the Middle East?
Do you have a oil? No, I studied, oil and gas or petroleum engineering. And that was because, I mean, you remember that back in the days, you know, the biggest employers of, I would say, the biggest employers and people that paid the highest, you know, were sort of the energy companies, IOCs in Nigeria. Well, let me just take a step back to why I decided to do that. Honestly, I didn't know what I wanted to do in undergrad. I just knew that I was really good at physics, math, and, you know.
What was your jam score?
Oh, it was pretty high. I think I got 284.
Oh, that's mad. Though.
Is that high?
I don't know. What was jam over what?
Over 400. Okay, I had an okay score, but you know, my strong points were math, you know, and physics. So, and I wanted to study engineering, but I didn't know what field. So, my dad is a mechanical engineer, so he actually, you know, helped me, you know, choose. And it so happened that my aunt was a professor within the field of petroleum engineering. So, I was like, okay, anything that gives me money, that would guarantee soft life. So, I chose it. But deep down, I've always loved, you know, the world of innovation. I think I watched, at that time, this movie was really The Social Network, you know. So, I think I watched it and I deep down, like, I want to do something like that.
Okay.
You know, but anyway, I went with the more feasible option, which is petroleum engineering. And then when it was time to come to grad school, you know, in Canada, I was like, okay, I have to, like, pivot now.
What did you pivot to? What did you take?
There was a course in Concordia University called Innovation and Technology. So it was like, it wasn't like product management specific, but it was more around, you know, the ecosystem, you know, how to, like, validate
ideas,
you know. And then there was a part of the program that afterwards you would work in a startup, right? So that was my first.
Well, I'm curious what, like, the courses look like. Like, what's, you know, in, we'll do, like, if it's computer science, we'll do advanced database topics, software programming. What courses would you?
Like business courses.
Okay.
You know, more of a bridge between the two. It wasn't technical, you know, but I started, you know, getting my hands on prototyping software. And it so happened that during the program, I enrolled in an innovation challenge by TD Bank. I think that was my big break, actually. TD Bank had this, you know, global innovation challenge where, you know, they were looking for great ideas. They had four themes. I can't really remember what they are right now, but, you know, got together, assembled a team of four people, and then we started, you know, like a hackathon, you know, started working on it, and then we prototyped our idea. And we, let me jump to the cool part. So from about 835 applicants, it was cut down to 20. And then they asked us to submit, you know, like a proof of concept. So we did, like, a quick prototype on Figma. That was my first design tool. My friend Nii.
So you can use Figma.
My friend Nii introduced me to, you know, Figma. Shout out to Nii. And then from 20, it got cut down to 3. Right, and we're among the final three. So,
So,
there was the final that was at TD headquarters in Toronto here. My first time coming to Toronto, had an all expense paid trip, and I lodged in one of the hotels there. And we're supposed to present to the VPs, you know, the following day. And which was cool. We ended up in second. We won two prizes, you know.
What prize did you guys win?
Best vote by the jury, and then second, that typical second. So and then we're giving cash prizes.
So
came back, you know, joined a startup in EdTech, very small team, working closely with the founder, where I was, you know, trying to, like, translate a lot of things that were on the roadmap into feature requirements. So that was, like, my first exposure into the world of product. But I credit my big break to joining that innovation challenge, because you know, that gave me the opportunity to take an idea that was just in my head into a feasible prototype. and presenting the roadmap, the business cake to, I said business cake, business case.
Is a cake.
Is a cake, actually. Is a cake, actually. You know, the business case to C-suite executives. So, yeah, that's when I had the light bulb moment that, okay, this is what I want to do for life. Yeah, yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that, what I'm hearing now is that you also learned how to present your ideas through that process, and that, is that what is that a lot of what you do in product management?
Yeah, in fact, I think it's the bulk of it. It's communication. I know people say communication, but it's a very vague concept, but it's very important, you know, because you're working with cross-functional stakeholders from, you know, if it's not vendors, it's your users that you're building products for, or the teams that you work laterally with.
Okay.
And then there's also communicating up, which is, you know, your executive stakeholders. So being able to like speak to all of these facets of
people.
Yeah, people is very important. You know, the way you would speak to a very technical person like yourself, you know, it's not the way you would speak to the person who's going to use the product at the end of the day. So just understanding those nuances is important.
How do you switch?
Code switching.
Yeah, because you have to, I understand, like, if you're talking with a technical person, you have to be very detailed into the technical, because that's where you have influence over the person. That's where you, because when you show that you understand that, the person can be willing to, you know, meet with you, like, but if you're talking with a, you know, C-suite person, you're not have to go into business. But how do you switch? Is it that you have to learn? Is switching learning? Like,
I think it's learned, you know, it's learned by doing. There's somebody that I consider a mentor who recommended a book called The Weekend Language. So
The Weekend.
Yeah, The Weekend Language. So it sort of teaches you how to communicate effectively, you know. So within this context, you can translate something that is of high complexity to your dad, you know, or a 5-year-old. Something that I practice, well, not so diligently, is sometimes if I'm working on a new concept or an idea, I always speak to someone who is not even within the field. And when they ask, oh, so what's up with work, and I tell them, oh, you know, so now I'm working on this, and they're like, wait, hang on, what's that? So you now have to like remember that they are not I try to explain it in layman terms. So that helps. There are audiences too that are non-technical, like, you know, a typical business audience is not technical. So knowing how to speak, you know, translate technical jargon into plain terms helps. I can give you an example. So one time when I worked in a startup, you know, when I was back in Montreal.
The EdTech?
Yeah, the EdTech one, you know, I wanted to explain the concept of an API to some of the users that were testing the feature. And the way I explained it, I don't even know where that inspiration came from, but I basically used the example of a restaurant, right? So, you know, imagine you go to a restaurant, you know, you speak to the server or whoever is at the counter, you give them your order. The server takes your order to the back office where they do the processing. You don't know what goes on in the background. All you know is that you're just gonna get your French fries, your home fries, and burger. That's how I use analogies a lot, you know, for non-technical audiences, and it helps, you know, it sticks better. So that's a good example.
That's cool. And so after the EdTech startup that you worked on, did you, because you know you said for your program, you have to work at a startup. Was that EdTech part of
it was the EdTech program? Yeah, it was the EdTech. And then after that, after graduation, joined a sports analytics startup. What they do is they use computer vision to get real-time data from sporting events. So they had two main products. One was for hockey, and then the other one was for soccer. So I was on the soccer tools, and just an internal tool for
That's very native to you.
It just felt like interest, and it just so aligned.
Do you have to, for as a product manager, do you have to work based off of interest, because you know interest can be niche. And take for example, if you wanted to be like a maybe sports analytics, you only wanted to work on sport analytics products and your interest is soccer, that's, even though there might be a lot of companies like that, but it's still very niche and like you are maybe boxing yourself. Is that how it is in the product world? Do you do you specialize?
That's a sorry. That's a good question. I think very few people are fortunate to be in spaces that so aligns with what they're most interested in. But for me right now, I'm just going with
chasing
the flow. Just
chasing
the bag, chasing you
the
know,
bag.
Honestly. But I've thought about what I really want to specialize in. Lately, I've been working on payments modernization that I, you know, I've discussed with you so many times about. And it's an interesting field, you know. It's multidimensional. It's essentially the fulcrum of businesses, right? Payments. So that's what I've been working on lately at work, and you know, there's a bit of interest that has driven me to just learn more about it. So we'll see if that's something I'll delve into. Delve. This word caused controversy on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Please do not chat GPT. You know, but before I digress,
before I delve in further,
but we'll see. I think that I'm still very young in the field, so there's still a whole world ahead of me, so I'm just like soaking it all in.
Okay, so I want to like, you know, maybe move back a little bit and you know, focus on, now I get from you that You pivoted. But you did you know, the master's in innovation and entrepreneurship. And that helped you become like a product manager. What sort of education do you think are useful for people that want to go into products?
This is something that people debate about because people will tell you that there's no linear path to it. Essentially, most people who are in the field right now are, they came from, you know, diverse backgrounds. Like me, I came from a very traditional engineering background. I would say it's a combination of self-learning and, you know, taking some courses online. Before, the typical route would be a software engineering undergrad and an MBA.
That was the combo,
you know, the sweet spot of, you know, once you just have your computer science degree, go and do an MBA, you know, you know, these days, you know, you could take, I did a certification in Scrum product ownership. That helps you understand the whole Scrum framework, you know, Agile. You know, working with agile teams. So I think that's a good place to start. Reading books as well helps. Remember the book you gave me?
Is it Cracking the
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. Shout out to Knife.
Yeah, I tried breaking, but I couldn't break.
Yeah, and then there's a, you know, short courses, you know, BrainStation has a whole course on it, but I mean, it's not for everyone. People think that, but I honestly, the best way is by doing it.
Well, so just do something.
Yeah,
that's,
you know, you take all that learning. You know, like in my case now, I did a hackathon, right? So I mean, that is essentially what you will be doing in your day to day, but on a amplified scale.
Oh, yeah.
So I think.
Now, speaking of day to day, since you said day to day, what does your day to day look like? Is it the same? Is it, you know,
No, two days are the same. Bunch of it is just like meetings, you know, stakeholders.
Do you like the meetings?
Well, at the beginning of the day, when you're engaged, yes, but anybody that fixes meetings was the end of the day.
Okay, I see. Like what time would you do?
Mornings, but also I like my focus time to be in the mornings too, but you know, you can't always have it.
How would you? Because it's hard to have focus time in the afternoon.
So what I do is, you know, set most of the meetings in the PM, like after lunch. You know, you just talk out all that lunch you've ate.
Oh, yeah.
Focus time in the morning. I spend time, a lot of what I do is quite data heavy. So, because when we're trying to define the roadmap, which is like the now priorities, now, next and later, you know, we have to understand what are some of the trends in, you know, the higher priority pillars that we want to tackle, right? So, looking at that data, trying to understand, you know, what clients are doing. So we call our users clients.
Facebook calls them people. It's a better way to kind of connect to them. You know, when you say users, it kind of sounds like an addictive type of stuff.
Wasn't it Facebook that sort of popularized that word, users?
Maybe, but then they now shifted to like, helping our people.
Yeah. So understanding what they're doing, work with designers a lot to get preliminary, you know, drafts of designs, depending on the stage of, you know, the projects that we're working on. A lot of it is also focused on working with technology teams. So the technology, we have two separate technology teams. One is more focused on the infrastructure, right? So like architects, and then there's another one that's closer to the day-to-day delivery of, you know, the product. So all of that, you know, linear fashion, but also analyzing, because I also have to look at what the competition is doing as well. Someone that's very market savvy, you know, helps. You have to understand what's going on,
how to fetch insights from the market,
rich insights,
that means some data analytics skills would be useful. I hear people in product say they you know, when they ask for requirements, it's like, get me, if you have SQL, if you have SQL skills or any form of like Tableau or ways that you can just fetch data. Or manipulate data and like build insights from the data. Do you do any of those technical, like any like coding? Because some product managers do like to fetch data, you have to do maybe a little SQL coding.
SQL, do I consider is that coding?
I mean, you write, you know, write declarative languages, language. So
So for in my day to day, I don't use SQL, but it's something I learned while I was trying to transition. I learned it, but I just never had the need to use
what it.
SQL.
Okay.
But you have to be able to understand dashboards. You know, we use Adobe Analytics. Adobe Analytics is really good. You have to be able to understand data around the funnel, like, you know, the end-to-end journey. And then, you know, looking at drop-offs, you know, that's something I do a lot. I found that execs like that, you know, when you see drop-offs, you know. Excel is like the OG. OG analytics tool. But just understanding data and trying to tell the story with data is essential. You don't have to be the, you know, data science guru, but I think just being proficient with data helps.
And, you know, another thing I want to touch on is, you know, the meeting culture. The meeting and, you know, meetings on meetings. Because some, like, when I see product managers' calendars, sometimes it's always filled up with, it's just, you know, from morning to the end of the day, it's filled up with meetings. Would you say, like, what balance should you have between that and focus work? It doesn't have to be what you're doing, do you think maybe they should delegate the focus work of product managers to other people? Because I know some product work, some focus work is you writing stuff down.
Writing requirements.
But if you have to be in all these meetings, that means you're working overtime.
Yeah, I think it's just having that, you know, and it comes with like maturity in the role, depending on, you know, how far along in the company you are. There are just some meetings that don't need to involve you. So knowing which ones there will always be meetings, but you just have to prioritize, you know, the most important ones. Mm-hmm. Finding time to do focus work too is essential. You know, if it's if you're a morning person, I would say just block off your calendar and you know, be unapologetic about it. Yeah.
What does focus work look like for you? What do you what do you do in particular in that focus work or some things that you do?
Right. So sometimes it could be studying. So if I'm working on a new course, you saw the white paper on my table today. Yeah. So
David was reading about Bitcoin.
BTC,
dear buddy.
Yeah, sometimes it could be studying. Sometimes you could just have an executive ask that says, put together a point of view on, I don't want to give a concrete example, but a point of view on something. Mm-hmm. It might just be a concept you never heard before. It happened to me recently where my director asked for put together a POV. And then you just have to make...
What does a point of view contain?
So a point of view is like what it is, our current state. Okay, what the ask is. So if I say, you know, Knife, can you put together a point of view on maybe...
on iPhone or something.
Yeah, you know, security concerns with the iPhone.
Okay.
Right? So you would essentially talk about what it is, what the concept is. Mm-hmm. Our current states, like your current states, you know, where we are in terms of with relation to that concept.
Okay.
What your closest competition is doing, what the trends are in that space, what are the key insights, you know, or opportunity gaps that we can focus on, and, you know, maybe potential risks, you know. So all of these are things that you have to...
You have to go and study and write.
Being able to do the reports, you know, being able to storytell, like I think you will just realize that making great decks is something that's you would acquire with time. Yeah.
I see one that they can give you. They can ask you, because now that everyone is doing AI, they can be like, how give us a point of view on how AI can be useful to our website. Maybe just the when just enter, you know, the website, like how useful it would be. So okay, that makes sense. So you have to do that. So what are that focus? What are that things?
The analysis part. Yeah. You know, I deal with huge chunks of data because they come from branch channels. So, you know, sometimes analyzing the maybe past 4 years of data from, you know, all over Canada. You know, analysis. Okay. Yeah, I spend time doing analysis. Requirements is not so much.
You mentioned some tools like the Adobe Analytics. You mentioned Excel. What other tools would you say is necessary for like the general product management industry? Oh, Jira.
Jira. That's ticket.
I use Jira.
Jira is, you can't run away from Jira. Which I'm really Splunk, you know. Splunk helps you to see, you know, sometimes like errors and stuff. Which am I leaving out? I would say that Jira Confluence,
And just maybe documentation.
All the documentation lives on Jira. So
Before I switch into, you know, the other segment, I wanted to ask, what would be your advice for people going into product today? If you wanted to give, because me, I've been trying to get into it, but nobody is giving me a shot. So maybe David, will you give me a shot?
When I found my confidence, you'll be co-founder.
I'll co-founder.
I'll do product. CPO. That's a good question.
For people going maybe into product,
you have to decipher what you enjoy spending time doing, right? You have to have good people skills. You know, some people, like, you know, are very technical, such that they just want to, you know, code their way all day. You know, some people are a bit introverted. There are people who are introverted at the product, but like, what I mean is, you have to be comfortable speaking to people.
I see.
Right. Sometimes when you're doing user testing, you know, just creating those unmoderated environments for recruited users, you know, it's you're going to speak to them, right? You explain what it is, what the concept is. I think presentation skills is very important. You have to be able to speak to audiences. So if you enjoy just being at the intersection of different functions, right?
Of everything.
If you, for me, I appreciate a good user experience, but I don't want to spend all day designing pixels. And there was no way.
Talk technical too.
Exactly. Yeah, there was no way I was going to go and learn, you know, front end from the beginning. So I didn't care about that. And I was also lucky because the guy that I worked with in Sport Analytics, V2, shout out to V2 if you are watching this. He actually looked at me one day and said, you know, I think you make a great fit for product. And that's why I just went with it. And then also some of my innate abilities, which is having an idea and just you know, fashioning how that is going to work, you know, building a concept. It's something I've always had, you know. If you're that kind of person, it so perfectly aligns that maybe, you know, being a product to help. I don't know. I don't know if it applies to everyone, but I think just a combination of people's skills on appreciating what a good user experience is and being able to influence. That's what I was missing. Influence, you know, because you're not, nobody's reporting to you directly. You know, we don't have any direct reports.
Okay.
But being able to influence, drive people to
an idea.
To a common goal.
Yeah.
Right. Also influencing stakeholders that, hey, I think we need to invest $30 in categories because you know, it brings people together and you lose, being able to influence those kind of outcomes, business outcomes in this case. If that's something you enjoy doing, then I say go for it.
That's good. So switching gears, switching gears almost completely, but you know, your newfound
hobby.
Which it's not hobby, but it's making you money. So it's hobby plus money.
I know. If it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, don't make dollars, don't make sense. So your new hobby, which you do now, which is MC. That's like my compare. Is that the meaning? What's the meaning of MC?
Master of ceremony. Yeah.
Or master compare. I think
there's a word compare. Yeah. Right. I think that's what people call it, but the literal meaning of MC is master of ceremony.
Yeah, master of the ceremony.
That's what we say.
It's like product management, master of products.
Yeah, okay. You know, just I think it's almost the same thing.
There's some intersection.
Yeah, overlaps. Yeah. Because think about it though, in an event, you're not the one DJing. You're just the one engaging the audience.
You're coordinating, sort of like you determine the flow of
inside,
the events.
Inside.
Oh. So David is also a master of ceremony and MC
event host.
I've been fortunate to do some events with David and
How have they been?
Moment of truth. Like really good, because I think it brings a lot of that, you know, that presentation skills from your product world.
Right.
And it's just very, very eloquent. You just speak out clearly.
IOTS doesn't lie.
You just speak clearly, and one thing that captured my attention for your MC was there was an event where we had, and there was heat in the room, and David sort of like apologized for the heat, and that sort of eased the audience a bit. Like people weren't, you know, as bothered about the heat again, and the way you said it, I think you just have a way of saying things. So actually it's not even necessarily like clearer, but the way you just combine what you say when you have the event, it's really good. So that's David.
Thank you for telling me. I've never heard this from you before.
Master,
ceremonies. You know, book your boy. You know, I'm into events right now. If you're trying to elevate your experiences at events, you know, give me a shout out. You know, your guests will be engaged, you know, people are gonna leave happier, you know, I bring that vibe, bring that energy, and you know, stay tuned.
Okay, so how did that come about for you? Where did you get your first experience?
Honestly, my bro, you were with me from the beginning now.
Oh yeah.
This is fairly recent. Mm-hmm. It all started in December. One of my very good friends, Jerry. Shout out to Jerry. Jerry was getting married.
Yeah.
He was having a civil wedding in December, mid-December, right? Mm-hmm. And he just hits me up. Honestly, it was by text message. And it was like, he sent the invite, you know, over text. I was like, Oshie, we outside. And then he was like, he wants me to host the event. Bro, I was like, I've never done this before.
Where did you see me?
I have never done this before. I have never put myself forward to say I'm a host of any sort, mm-hmm. but he just asked me to do it. And a part of me thought, okay, why not, right?
Oh, yeah.
What's the worst that will happen? I mean, he's my friend. I understand how stressful it is putting events together. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you just need to volunteer to help. So I was like, okay, I'll do it, you know. And there was no hard preparation. There was no script.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in fact, when he told me to do it, I was like, okay, do you have DJ? He was like, no, he doesn't have DJ. I was like, okay, I have someone that's DJ. So I reached out to you. So two of us, we ran the events together. I just got there and we just did our thing. And honestly, the reviews that I got was so good. I don't even remember how well I performed that day. But, you know, from the feedback that I got, you know, I thought, okay, maybe this is something that I should continue doing, right? And since then, opportunities have come, you know. Also, shout out to Knife. He's been putting me on. So, So, I think also maybe just tying back to how this translates to what I do in daily basis, like just taking feedback mm-hmm. and, you know, and making it iterative.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, so from that feedback that I got, I was like, okay, you know, it's not to hold mic and talk and get people engaged. Sure, why not? And like they say, the rest is history.
Oh, yeah. Sweet. And, you know, what's like the most challenging thing about maybe doing an event or emceeing an event? What's challenging?
So, moment of truth. The one that I struggled with the most was when you guys did Afro R&B in February.
So for those who don't know, we organize, so Uncles organizes raves, and so it's like, you know, the DJs are on stage and then there are people on the dance floor, and so if you are an MC, you have to like face like the crowd and engage them with the song. So it's like a hype man.
So that was different for me because my style is very, you know, witty, very eloquent. Like you mentioned, like I'm just someone that's, you know, I come up with things on the spot rather and just go with it, right? So there's no template that I use, right?
Okay.
So I consider one of my strengths to be witty, so you know, so I do it in very chilled audiences. A typical audience would be wedding guests, you know, people that are
already
dressed up fresh, you know.
Sit down, relax.
Yeah, sit down, relax. You know, they don't want stress. You know, they just want to hear how good they are looking, dab them up. So that's my typical audience. But this one was different in the sense that it was a bunch of young millennials, Gen Zs that were out to have fun that night. And it was a total of 600 people that you guys had.
500.
Yeah, 600 people and 500 plus people. And I had to face them, to engage them all now. So one thing I struggled with was, you know, I was asking you, is my voice loud enough?
Oh, yeah.
Because in my head, I'm shouting. But I don't know if it's enough to, you know,
to
engage,
to get everyone
gingered. So that was a learning experience for me. You know, hosting events like that require a different type of stage presence, which I, you know, learned a lot from that day. And so you asked what the challenge was, right?
Yeah.
So I think just being fluid with the audience is would be different. The biggest asset you can have, and it comes with getting more wins under your belt.
Okay,
you know,
getting more experience.
Yeah, getting more exposure, getting more experiences.
But those wedding guests were sort of like a comfort zone for you, like where you, because when you did it the first time, it was already good. But if we threw you into the rave the first time, it wouldn't have been good. So that would be like your comfort.
It wasn't a bit of a comfort at the same time. I was nervous, but it was a softer landing than being thrown into a rave of 500 plus people. Yeah, I had no problems facing the crowd, but you know, shouting, I don't like to shout. I'm like stress.
If you need a soft, nice, calm, relaxed MC.
Yeah, you know, I'm your host. Yeah, host with the most. But with that being said, I'm doing raves now because some everybody's outside.
Oh yeah, you have to. I feel like a pool party.
Pool party
might be a pool party that is pretty relaxed. You know, we are always like, you know, it's back to back, boom, boom, dance, dance, shout,
got
sing.
It. Yeah.
So no one has space to even really think or really assimilate what someone is
saying. It's just like,
It's just quick. Right. But if, I think maybe a pool party. Can be,
okay. Can be. Yeah. Pool party, rooftop vibes. Rooftop kind of vibe. But with that being said, you know, I'll continue trying. I'll continue trying. That rave.
Just, you know, have
a variety, and then I'll see which one they pay pass.
Yeah. So you know, to cap it for the two, you know, product management and, you know, MCing now. Can you give me for both of them what the future? You know, you can't really you can see where you want to go, but you can't really, you know, life happens, and you know, you just move with life and where it carries. But what does the future look like for you and for the industry, and for both product management and MCing?
For me, so like my personal roadmap or just general.
Like a personal that ties along with the general roadmap of product management.
Personal.
Tell us your secrets.
You know, when they ask you what your 5-year plan, so my plan is to grow in this company and grow in this company.
In 5 years, I'll be
I see myself taking up, you know, senior leadership roles where I work with senior management to lay out long term structure. That's my interview answer.
That's the official answer.
My personal one, let me hold my cards to my chest because, you know, I have ups.
Ups. If you are David Ops.
Let me speak in general.
If you are David Ops.
Yeah, I got ups. So,
please comment below.
Yeah. In general, you know, with definitely you can't shy away from emerging technologies. Mm-hmm. There's just a plethora of them. You know, AI, even in AI, like there's a ton of use cases. Mm-hmm. You know, there's blockchain.
Yeah.
You know, the Internet of Things. So I think being comfortable, you know, with one of these technologies would definitely set you apart, regardless of what field you're in. You know, so I mean, financial services. So, you know, there's tons of use cases. Like we started exploring, you know, AI and you know, there's virtual assistant, chatbots. So, these technologies have high applicability, right, regardless of the field. So, I think just having a future outlook on trends would help. The other one is kind of also skills wise, you know, you can, there's no end to being, you know, business savvy. I think being technical really helps. I can't even lie, but being technical helps, but, you know, work closely with, you know, devs and engineers, just understand, you know, what is feasible, like, and what's not.
Leverage them.
Exactly. But business, you're driving business outcomes, most importantly. So being business savvy.
If you've already learned, you know, the communication skills, you are pretty proficient in doing it. what can the future of learning that be? Like, how can you just constantly improve on that? That, you know, take for example, if it's software, you can just keep learning new tools and learning the advanced,
right?
How to use those tools in an advanced way. What is it like for, like, in terms of for communication?
I read somewhere that, you know, if you cannot explain a concept to a 5-year-old, you don't really understand it. So, you know, at the core of it, you know, it sounds funny, but what they're trying to say is that you should be able to break down complexity, right, to the smallest, smallest size, right?
So look for 5-year-olds and just
you know, or you know, call your parents, you know, call your parents, you know, tell them explain what you know and explain, you know, that's good practice, you know, that's something that I do.
Okay,
yeah, parents, you know, whoever, you know, not to bore your friends what you do, but you know, sometimes just it helps. I heard a very non-conventional example. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, let's go.
Storytelling.
But is it that you just find any story and just tell it?
So storytelling is, you know, how you're able to craft a narrative around whatever. So like, in this case, an idea or a product. So what is the narrative? You know, a vague example could be, Categories is a game that unites families, right, by challenging them or creating competitive spaces. You know, just crafting a narrative. What's the narrative around this game? It's not just a card game.
It's fighting.
It leverages competition to, you know, create strong family bonds. That's a narrative, right? So, in a bigger picture, you know, you have to be able to craft a narrative around how this is tied to what the market needs and how that is going to make your company successful. So being data driven also helps, you know, saying this leads to X% sales or X% cost savings. You know, being able to craft a narrative is very good. And one way to learn that is, I don't know how effective this is, but I've heard, if you listen to the way comedians have stand-ups, comedians are one of the best storytellers. I've heard that, you know, they start with, they give the punchline first and then they walk you through the backstory.
And then now hit you on that punchline.
Hit you on that punchline. Yeah. So, you know, when you're presenting, state what the solution is and then how you arrived at it. You know, don't, typically what people do is that, they start from
the beginning. Start dragging.
This is the problem. This is what we did. Guy, the other is already snoozing, you know? So this is what we did, how we did it, and this is the outcome. You know, start with that first. And so storytelling really helps. Communicating, you know, just explaining things. Thinking in first principle. First principle.
Very root of
first principle thinking. Yeah. So you have to be methodological in your approach. Yeah. And then the other question you asked
for
is,
what is the future?
That is a good question. So the future will look like, you know, hosting corporate events, you know. My typical clientele would be, you know, high net worth individuals.
Wow. High net worth individual.
You know, so if you're a high net worth individual, comment below. Let's hold some fundraising galas.
Let's raise some
millions.
You know. David will be able to persuade them.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell them a story.
You know,
about the funds that's needed.
That's the kind of events that I just really enjoy. I envision myself I think about someone like Trevor Noah. I'm not saying I'm funny like Trevor Noah, but like, think about Trevor Noah, how well he combines, you know, his eloquence with, you know, humor and also being socially conscious. You know, that's a very good example. In Nigeria, a good example would be someone like Ike or Bovi too, but Bovi, you know, has a very good sense of humor. Like, he started off as a comedian, right? I'm not that funny, but
I watched one of Bovi's and Access Bank video, and he was just able to just merge everything, like
right
the MCing, public speaking, cracking jokes, and it was nice.
So you know, just it also works with like product, in the sense that being aware of what's going on in the market with your competition, so you have to be socially conscious, you know, socially aware of what's happening. Yeah. You know, you want to talk about something that people can relate to.
Wouldn't that require just some studying and understanding? So if you want to MC at, say, TD Bank, TD Bank is in hot waters now. But
really, what happened?
We will not speak bad about TD Bank on this podcast. But there's something about like drug money laundering. I mean, it's not that they were aware of it, but it was just passing through their banks.
Okay.
But take for example, you wanted to do something for like TD Bank, you may have to just study a bit.
Yeah.
Which is the study that is your focus work that
exactly. You know, you have to know what's going on before you go and say something that's related to what they're
before you go and say something
what they're implicated in, and everybody just be like, who be this guy? So yeah, just being able to read the audience too helps, you know, the way I would say certain things with you guys, or you know, a typically black audience is not the same way I would say things in a diverse audience, you know. So honestly, that one just comes with time, practice. Understanding what, you know,
what each audience needs,
what people not like us find funny.
Okay.
Yeah, what people not like us find offensive. Right.
I see.
You know, humor is very geographic, you know.
You can't crack it.
Exactly.
It might even be maybe Toronto and Ottawa people. Something as simple as that.
Exactly. You can't crack. Yeah, you know, you can't crack, you know, or make light jabs about something that's very relevant in Toronto. Or let's say I'm hosting an event with our parents, right? It's someone's 60th birthday, and then I'm talking about the Kendrick Lamar and Drake beef.
Yeah, what was that?
So yeah, just understanding, you know, your audience helps. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, that's sweet. Thank you so much for your time today. Do you have any last words for us? Last words for our audience?
Last words.
Any? We'll have you back on this pod.
For sure. Yeah. I'd love to do this
when
again.
When you are now doing a...
And then in a few months,
high net worth clients,
you know. But that's not to say you guys cannot still book, or you know, we have to start from somewhere. So you guys are potential high net worth individuals. So we trust
you people.
I don't despise the days of little beginnings. So you know, feel free to holler at me.
That's sweet. So,
Uncle.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, had fun doing this.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
Bye for now.